Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2021. Today, Introduction to Finance. Okay, anyway, this is a class that shows you a lot of different aspects of finance. However, most people think of finance as being investments, stocks and bonds, but there is so much more to finance. There are all these different ways that you can travel in finance. Now, it would be nice if I could turn all of you into finance majors. We need people for the dark side. We really do. We lost a lot of people in that Death Star blast. And so we've got to bring you more of you recruits in. But even if you decide you don't want to major in finance, you don't want to minor in it, you are going to live in a corporate world where finance people are really kind of the dark side. We say no to your projects. We hurt your feelings about that. When you want to finance something, we're the ones who say yes or no. If they're going to hire you, it has to come through us. We're not going to pay you $70,000 a year, maybe 60, and then the human resources people have to come back. If we don't pay them 70, then we're going to lose them to the companies that are paying 70, and I'm going to say prove it. Prove that to Mark. You see, so if you've got a project that you want to, it's a marketing campaign or something like that, it has to come through us. We decide whether it is positive or negative net present value. If it's negative net present value, we just say no. And then you're all honked off at us and you slash my tires on my car. Really? I just got those tires at Sears and they're, okay. So you understand that even if you're not going to be finance majors, it's going to be part of your professional lives. And there's something that is deeper going on here. Let's try you. Get away from me. Sir, how much are you worth? You don't have any idea? $5? Higher? Tell you, probably $4 to $6 million. That would be the present value of your future expected cash flows. We bring all those back to now. What is that worth? So if I were to buy insurance for you, I would probably look for something about $4 million, which would be a fair trade-off between you as a living person and you as a dead can of meat. Okay? That was harsh. But, you see, we have to, in finance, we have to liquidate. You can't tell me I'm special. I'm beautiful, I'm a pretty guy, or I'm an attractive person. We need numbers, a liquidated value. But I'll tell you right now, and I'm going to show you this, Microsoft is worth $2.19 trillion. One company is worth more than every person that you have ever met in your life added up, and every relative of every person you've met added into the mix. One company. That's a scale of what we are facing when we say, I am important, I am valuable. You better figure out some way to make that true, because in this universe, those corporations are literal giants. That's one of the big problems that we have now. We see things that are of such scale that it makes us feel trivial and irrelevant, and then we fight out, we lash out, and we argue with the experts, this can't possibly be true. I am meaningful. And you'll see that there are ways we can be, but you have to face the fact that these corporations are insanely huge. And I'll show you some of that today. But finance isn't all about just investments. Finance has many other possibilities too. And I'm not, yes, I am. To a certain extent, I'm trying to induce you to consider finance. But I'm also cautioning you that the world is a world of money and of capital. And we have two different lives. We have this life that is our personal, emotional life. But out there in the business world, that's money. That's driven by greed, that's driven by physics, that's driven by things that aren't opinions and beliefs. They are cold, hard facts, data, and equations. And so in that world, we have to play by their rules. Look, investments is great. Buying and selling, but it is definitely, there is a kind of person who does this. Very forward-leaning, aggressive, hungry all the time. Some of my most successful students are constantly calling me back, telling me what the day was like. Man, I was up $250,000, and then I just got my ass beat, and I'm down $300,000 today. Things like that. And it's just another day for them. Man, did you hear what the Fed chairman said yesterday? Constantly. This is a world that is clocking 24/7. It is awake and alive around the world. And now it's beginning, it will, within the next 10 years, be out there in near-Earth orbit with hotels and other commercial ventures, mining asteroids within 20 years, 25 years probably, will be on the table. All kinds of things are happening, and it is expanding. And that world is a world where the competition is ungodly. You're not competing against each other. I guarantee you that. You're competing against countries, nations like China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Japan, countries that will slit our throats. Why? Because we had our throats open for them to do it. So if you want to be a part of this world, you have to figure out how we're better. And part of that is that these countries, they cheat. We cheat too, but they do it, they lie, they can't stop. And that's one of the great things that's happening now is, although I don't like everyone trashing everything about history, the awakening is how we get honest with ourselves, and that's in finance. I don't want to hear about this investment that's great. You show me the numbers. I don't care if you think you're a great business person. You show me that you've actually accomplished something in your lives. You see, we are getting good at that, having to be honest with ourselves, and that is making us stronger, and that's one of our greatest assets, that and the fact that we're all pretty damn good-looking people. But some of us are. I am, but okay. Investments is one part of it. It is a clocking world, always on. You can't let sentiment get in your way at all. Another one is the corporate finance. These are the finance people who are internal. They decide the yes or no of projects. Money comes in, where do we invest it until we have to spend it? That kind of thing. You want to hire someone? Well, we're going to have to figure out where to get the money for that. You want a new factory? Well, we have to figure out where we get the capital to do that. That's corporate finance. It is well good paying, obviously, and you have quite a bit of power in the company. The other ones that are out there, in no particular order, financial planning. We have one of the ranked financial planning institutes of the nation where we help people, individuals, families, corporations, trust funds, prepare for the future and achieve their goals at the specific times that those goals want to be achieved. That's financial planning. Do understand that financial planners don't care about poor people or lower middle class people. We financially plan for upper middle class and wealthy people. The rest of the world, unfortunately, can go pound salt, and that's not a good thing. However, I have a couple of my former students who are making insane money. They worked really hard for 5-10 years, but then they just sit around collecting the premiums and collecting the commissions and all that. Another one that is heavy duty out there is real estate finance. And I'm not talking about spying and selling homes for mom and dad. I'm talking about skyscrapers and ginormous commercial malls, all kinds of malls, from the little strip malls on through to the big indoor malls. I'm talking about ginormous communities built with a giant wind turbine in the middle. I'm talking about fields of turbines as far as the eye can see. Commercial real estate is enormously valuable. Huge stuff. And then there is, oh, there are a bunch of them. But I want to bring up this one. Entertainment finance. Entertainment finance. I'm not talking about ponds and lakes of money. I'm talking about vast rivers of money flowing into even vaster oceans of money. Entertainment, everything from movies and television, mainstream, indie, on through to hip-hop, classical, folk, country, anything you want. We're talking about sports. Sports is insane. The vast amounts of money pouring into sports 24/7. You like sports? We'll find a sport you like. You like golf? You like this? You like that? We'll find something for you. And if you don't have anything, we'll figure out something new for you. And curling isn't a crime, man. Now, pickleball, for God's sake. Bodybuilding competition. Anything you want in entertainment. From the bright lights of Disney movies to the darkest dark of pornography, it is all there, waiting for people to make money off it. As the creators, as the producers, as the directors, as the middlemen, the agents for the talent, for the equipment to make things happen, all of that is part of it. I took my students up so that they could see the, I guess it's US Cellular, and we went down in the basement with the finance people there at White Sox. It was just talking about these scales of money that were just staggering. And they were talking about their charitable thing. They run all these little league teams, 2,000, I couldn't believe it, in Chicagoland. 2,000 little league teams. And of course they do it just for, because they love kids. No, they don't. Why are they doing it? Why do they spend $6 million every summer for little leagues and team baseball teams in Chicagoland? Does anyone know? Come on, I need you guys to wake up here. Talk to me. Why is this happening, sir? Why would that be? Why would a baseball team spend $6 million for little kids to swing at balls in a field? Well, yeah, that's it. There's that. Of course, there's also the PR. We help little kids. Aren't we wonderful? But there's another reason. Come on, think. Yeah.
Can they write it off on the tax?
Oh, well, there's definitely that. I mean, they're charitable as always. I mean, I give to so many charities because I love all these. No, I don't. Although the Alley Cats charity, I do that because I love cats. But there's another reason. You listen and you watch team after team. All it takes is one arm, one kid who can swing a bat, one kid who can run a base, and you've got gold. Those are talent search engines. The agents are there every day at these fields looking for that one kid who's got the arm that can throw. He's 11 years old and he can throw a ball at 96 miles an hour. Hell. That's worth that whole neighborhood's teams. You see, there's always an angle, always a way to make money, and oftentimes it helps people. You get people to the ballpark, they're not out there committing crimes. You give people sports, and they're running and exercising, wearing themselves out instead of getting into trouble. This is all for the good of everyone. And so entertainment finance is just a vast ocean, and I was involved in parts of it, briefly out in and out of it over the years. As I said, for a while I was in gospel music entertainment, and it was entertainment. This was money-making. It was phenomenal back in that time, and it's even more, it's insane now. But then I was also in a couple other areas of it, too, that I won't get into too much. But even to this day, I'm in entertainment with all of my videos and my artwork. That's entertainment. I'm making people feel like they are meaningful by buying my art, and then they connect to me because I'm a brooding artist who sits there wondering if anyone's going to care about me before I die. Everything's an angle. Sounds harsh? Yeah, it is. Okay. Let's go on here. Oh, I used them. Oh, they are so going to beat me. Oh, my God. You really shouldn't have done that, man. Holy cow. They're already mad at me anyway because of the ashes I keep in my office. God! Shut up! Yeah, that looks... perfect. God, it's hot in here. Okay. Now, oh, that looks like ass. Okay. I don't think I'll write on the board anymore today. Here's the next part of this, is that corporate finance and investment, all the different aspects of finance, they're part of the larger picture of a corporation. And you are, almost all of you, going to be probably employed by one of those big corporations, the evils of the universe or whatever. But I want to take you and have you look at screens for just a minute here so that you can get a sense. Okay, I'm going to pull it up. And again, I'll use, what the heck is this thing? Finance.yahoo.com. Now, if we look at the markets, it's kind of the same pattern. And again, remember what I told you. It is definitely not the heck? How you doing? Boy, that person disappeared. Okay. It is not the absolute numbers that matter to us. It's the percentages that are what matter. And in this case, as you can see, this is noticeable. These are down enough to catch my attention. And remember I told you, the S&P 500 and the Dow 30 aren't exchanges. They're just ginormous portfolios of stocks. Theoretical, but you can actually do... Do you have $800,000? You know, here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, right here with you, $800,000. Do you have it? You got a car? You want to check under the seats and see if there's any change? $800,000 worth of change? Okay. Okay, fine. You're one of those people who keeps your car clean. Here's the thing, though, is in order to create the S&P 500 portfolio, you'd have to have an insane amount of money to do that. You'd have to buy each of those 500 companies' stock in the right proportion so that it was balanced by the value of each one. That would be an insane amount of money. However, you can actually buy the S&P 500. There are kind of like companies, they're sort of companies. The company buys the S&P 500. Then you buy shares in that company, so you own a full piece of the S&P 500. Okay, so you could actually do that, and it's not that expensive. Matter of fact, one is called the Spider. It's an ETF or an ETN, I don't remember. But anyway, and I'll show you how you can do that. So in other words, it's absolutely crucial that you diversify your portfolio. Crucial. If you're going to be a responsible investor, yeah, over here on the side you can have your slush fund where you're playing one stock or a couple of stocks, but your main core, where you have the responsibility for your long-term future, for that of your family, or your corporation, or whatever it is for what you're managing money, that has to be well diversified. And the S&P 500 is ridiculously well diversified. The Dow is another one, 30 companies, huge companies, and so it would be very expensive if you wanted to try to buy each of those 30 and make your own portfolio. However, there are ETFs, ETNs that can do that. NASDAQ is a real exchange. It is an electronic exchange. Like the New York Stock Exchange, like the American Stock Exchange, and then there are regional exchanges like the Philadelphia Exchange, things like that. And then there are exchanges all over the world. Every major city, country has its own, like Nikkei is Japan's. There is a cluster of 225 companies that form the Nikkei 225 Index, which is how we track the performance of the Japanese stock market. In London, they have their own exchange, and we track that through the FTSE 100, 100 big stocks on the London Exchange. These are all over the world, the Nikkei Japan, the London Exchange. You've got the Han or Hang in China. You've got, my God, there are so many names that I can't keep track of every one of them. Some of them are massive exchanges. Some of them are barely alive exchanges. But it's all over the world these are happening, these exchanges. And notice here today, you see that the Dow was down 1.08%. S&P 500 down just a tiny bit less, 1.07%. And then the NASDAQ was down less, 0.89%. So there was a bad news day. Something rattled the markets, chased the markets down a little bit. But notice how it had a larger impact the bigger the companies were. Do you see that? NASDAQ is little scrappy companies. Oh, well, there are some enormous companies on it. But for the most part, it's giant. The NASDAQ is small caps and mid caps. And so, and I'm using a term, and you'll get used to it, and I'll show you what I mean by that here in a little bit. But it looks to me like there was bad news, okay? So, yeah, it happened. Okay, so now let me take you over here to the next thing. And I always get behind the first week or so because I want to get you through this first round. And again, you're not going to get words right and you're going to answer me with, I don't know. At first, you get better the more I expose you to this. Because the more I expose you to this, the more intelligent you get as investors. And you put behind you, well, I read this on YouTube, or I played Robin Hood, and you get down to showing that you know enough that idiots can't take advantage of you or bullcrap their way and try to say what their opinions are when you know that's wrong. Now, let me show you, well, S&P 500. Now, the previous close yesterday, now the markets are closed now, so the previous close yesterday was at 4448, 4448. Now, when it opened this morning, it was down. That would mean overnight there had been some more sell orders, a little bit more sell orders than buy orders. So when the bell rang this morning, there was a slight drop. This is nothing. I mean, that's $8 on 4,440. But there was a little bit of a tick downward. Now, notice something interesting, though. Well, first of all, the day's range was from about 43.97 and change up to 44.54. That's actually a swing of only about 60 points. That's trivial. It was, in other words, a very tight trading range. Now, over the last week, 52 weeks, though, it has swung from a low clear down at 3,200 on up to a high that was near 4,500. But if you'll notice, tell me this, sir, is the S&P 500 near its 52-week high or nearer to its 52-week low? Yes. Do you see how right now it stands at 4,400? it has gone up over the past 52 weeks to 44.73. So it is near its high for the past 52 weeks. So from my perspective, and I will keep telling you these things, and it will begin to soak in slowly, like osmosis or something, that gives me a little bit of concern, because it's either going to make a run and break through, or it's going to test that 52-week high and then start screaming like a scalded dog and fall. But if it tests it and it can't clear it, I'm going to get out of the way, because that means that it tried, it hit the wall, and it ran backwards. Now, let me, one more thing. Notice that the volume. Now, the volume is how many shares traded on the books. There are also off-books trades, too. But on the books today, S&P 500 stocks, about 1.9 billion shares. But that's a little more than half of what typically happened on a day over the last 52 weeks. So do you see that trading was light today? It was a light trading day. Now let me get this, start testing your thinking. And if you're wrong, it's okay. I'll just say, God, you're dumb. No, I won't do that to you. I really won't. Because I want you to try to start pushing your way through. Sir, why would volume be light on a given day? Why wouldn't there be the trading that would normally happen? Well, it didn't go down much. I mean, it was a pretty... Yeah, it did. Okay. And you're right. There was a little concern. But see, if people just don't want to trade, it's probably going to stay level. But if there's a concern, then what trading there would be would probably be to get out of positions, as you said. You see, think about it this way. Madam, we're in the zombie apocalypse. You're not a zombie. But are you going to be dancing around on your roof and yelling, hey, yay, wee, someone bring the popcorn? Or are you going to stay quiet? You're going to stay quiet. You don't want your brain eaten. How are you possibly going to pass this course without your brain being eaten? Now, obviously, it'll work for courses like accounting. Well, I did not say that. Do I have any accountants in here? Oh, dear God. Okay, I didn't mean that. But you see, if you're staying quiet, there is possibly a little bit of nervousness. Now, if there's a lot of concern, everyone's going to sell like hell. So, you know, that's our old thing, sell like hell. But in this case, it's probably more almost a wait and see, kind of adjust at the margin the position, shave off a little bit. Don't panic. But at the same time, there's a little concern here. Now, let me do the next thing I'm going to do. I'm going to take you to show you a stock. And we're going to start looking at screens of stocks. So for lack of anything better, MSFT, Microsoft. Okay, Microsoft. Yesterday, it closed at 292.52. This morning, it opened at 292.04. So there was a little bit of an imbalance towards sell orders going into the opening bell. Nothing spectacular at all, hardly anything. Now, the next thing here is bid and ask. The bid is what you can sell this stock at. The ask is what you can buy it at. A lot of people don't know that that price really doesn't mean a whole lot. That's what is going to happen. If you want to sell your Microsoft or some of your Microsoft stock, you're going to sell it for $290.21. If you want to buy some Microsoft, you're going to pay $290.41. So the bid-ask spread is 20 cents.
Why is there a spread? Well, one, market makers have to make some money some way, for God's sake. And two, it would also indicate just how much there was pressure on one side versus the other, buys versus sells. The spread is oftentimes narrower when there's a lot of trading back and forth. But in this case, the bulls and bears sort of split the difference today. Now, a bull is an investor who is optimistic, whose judgment is that a stock or stock markets or something will go up. A bear is an investor who is pessimistic about a stock or the economy or something like that. Bulls, positive. Bears, negative. So as you can see, with the day's profile, there was an instantaneous drop-off. But then the bulls took control. Coming out of the gate, do you see the moo? Moo. Up. But then the bear said, oh, no, you don't. We see the price high. That makes us some money. We're going to sell out. Bam. And then they just went back and forth. A roller coaster. Whee. Whee. And then at the end, the bear said, enough. And the bears took over in the last hour and a half of trading, and they won the day. Microsoft was down more than 0.5%. You see the aftermarket there? The aftermarket, it's down even more, so the bears are still in a bad mood going into the evening. Okay, you see it in the aftermarket? It's still going down. So there's bad news, and it keeps there. And understand that the bad news wasn't just one thing. Apparently, there's just a lot of sour sentiment going through. If it was just one piece of bad news, it'd probably all have been at once. Well, maybe, actually, you know, I'm looking at that. I'm wondering if all of that is some bad news about Microsoft that happened in the afternoon. Do you see how it just suddenly, off a cliff it went? It was just sort of a back and forth there for most of the day. And then it just sort of dropped off a cliff. By the way, I'm showing you how I think. This is what I'm doing with you, is you're actually seeing the internal thinking of a real trader. I did this for a living, and I still have to put up with hearing about it from all of my former students who are doing it every day of their lives, which is cool, but I mean, let me show you something. See that $2.185 trillion? That is the number of Microsoft shares that are outstanding times the price per share. The market cap is the number of shares outstanding times the price per share. You don't need to worry too much. I'll write this formula on the board, but I just want you to know this is the market's assessment of the total equity value of the corporation. In other words, what all of the ownership stock position in the corporation is worth. That's what that is. Now let me show you something interesting. I'm going to go over here and sneak in your first peek, maybe your first peek, at SEC.gov. And we're going to look at MSFT. Every company has to report everything about itself. If you want to be a public company, you have to show your laundry. I was explaining that. It was interesting this morning. The developing countries that come here, they send their personnel from ministries of finance, land and natural resources, and other governmental agencies. They send them here, and I give them crash courses in finance, in investment, in how to raise money for corporations. And one of the things that I was just hammering, and I do this every time, I just hammering home this idea of transparency. You want money from the world? You tell us everything. And if you lie, we will never come back to your door. But if you show us honesty and you have great transparency, we can see to it that you don't get ripped off more than the risk level that you deserve. So, for example, one West African country, I just had a heart attack. They were rated well by Standard & Poor's. They have stability. They have an incredible natural resource base. Their workforce is great. And yet the World Bank lent them close to $1 billion at 17.5% interest. My God, that was insane. And they said, well, what can we do? And I said, transparency. You show the world all of your financials. You show the world that your companies tell the truth, they show everything, you abide by the rule of law, you're trustworthy in contracts, and we can find you money. Hell, we can find it in the United States, Japan, Canada, China, Saudi Arabia, Dubai, United Arab Emirates, you name it. We can find you money if you show us everything and you are totally honest. And that's what happens in the United States. As a matter of fact, in the United States anymore, the officers and directors have to sign all of these disclosure documents on Form 10-K, 10-Q. If they lie, guess what? They go to prison. So we have this very strong rule of law and transparency. Let me show you something. Microsoft just sent out its 10-K. That's its annual report. Now here you can see the actual paper document. I used to do these back when they were paper. This is one, and they have to do this every quarter and every year. It's insane. But even more interesting is, look at this. All of the financial information is available so you can see it, copy and paste it. Oh, but it's even more unbelievable than that. Every corporation in the United States that is public has to put all of its financial statements in Excel for everyone to see. Now, I'm going to spend a lot of time talking to you about this because this makes you look like a friggin' hero. Because you can just take these financials, make little charts, copy and paste into your Word document, and do all that, and you're a hero, and they did all the work. Look at this. Income statements. Weird stuff. Balance sheets. Balance sheets with parentheses. Statements of cash flow. And on, and on, and on, and on, and on. Look at this. Everything has to be there. So if you're looking, if you don't want to copy and paste and type in tables, it's right here for you to do. And you can do calculations all day long. I can do all of those financial ratios without breaking a sweat. I just put it in a center column and I say, well, take this divided by this, and there's that financial ratio. This divided by that, there's that financial ratio. That's how great it is in that's what transparency does. You see, because if I can do it this easily, I'm not sweating the trivial stuff. I can make decisions much faster on investments. And I can cut through the numbers and ask, what do the numbers mean, a lot faster. But let me show you something here. The balance sheet, okay, I want you to remember that the market cap, the value of the shareholders' equity total, is $2.185 trillion. Oh, wait, there's a problem. What the heck? The accountants say that the value of the stockholders' equity is $141.988 billion. Those are the same thing, the value of the stockholders' equity. Now, the market says that the value of all the ownership taken together is $2.19 trillion. The accountants say it's $141.988 billion. Who's right?
They can't both be right. Well, let me frame it this way. Are you going to buy a stock in Microsoft from an accountant or from a broker?
I would buy it from an accountant.
You could not. He's an accountant. He sits in a room. They let him out an hour every day for sunshine and vitamin D. And then they put him back in there.
He's too angry.
He's angry because everyone calls him GIMP. Okay?
Okay.
You know the reference, right, from Pulp Fiction?
No.
Okay. I keep forgetting. You guys are young. I even say Death Star, and people don't know what the Death Star is. I mean, it's just like, okay, it's an evil little character that has a head thing that it wears. And never mind. Look, you buy it from a dang-gone broker, okay?
I know what the
hell is. Yeah, oh, you do? So what are you? Are you, like, part of the Federation?
I'm a clone.
Oh, God, okay. Ew. Okay, you see, what I'm trying to get here is someone's right, but you see, it's the thing where the market says it's worth $2.19 trillion, which means that if you are going to deal with the value of this, and the value in your portfolio, and the value of investments, the accountants figured it out. This is how much each share of stock sold for when it was sold years ago, plus all of the income that the company has gained that it didn't give back in dividends at the net income line. But that doesn't tell what the actual value of the corporation is. We go on a safari, and we're standing out there in the middle of nowhere in this ginormous cat thing. At us. Well, I opened my field guide and said, oh, that's a kitty. They are very friendly. They like to be cuddled and rubbed on the tummies. And then you look up and there's the teeth. Who are you going to believe? That cat or your field guide? Yeah, because that cat has not had its friskies today. And so you and me, we're its a lunch. Okay? That's not a good death. Okay. I consider no death is good where they have to recover your remains when the cat has gone to the bathroom. Okay. You think about it. Am I wrong? Okay. Okay. Yes, I begin to get a little punchy at this time of day. Deal with it. Okay, but that's what I'm trying to tell you there is that the accounting is not where the reality of the corporation lies. Now, I want to tell you this right here. See this? Beta is a measure of risk. It is our finances' favorite measure of risk because it doesn't measure all of the risk. That's standard deviation. Beta measures only the risk of Microsoft in a well-diversified portfolio. In other words, it doesn't measure the insane amount of risk you bear if you're a stupid, irresponsible investor who buys a single stock. Microsoft bought on its own. It is wildly volatile. But you put it into a well-diversified portfolio, and it is a pussycat. See, 1.00 is the world portfolio. That's considered like the fulcrum. Anything below that is quieter than the world in a well-diversified portfolio. Anything above one is more volatile than the world. So we would say that 0.78 is defensive, is a defensive stock. It doesn't go crazy. Something above one would be an aggressive stock, an aggressive investment. But you see, this is all when you put it into a well-diversified portfolio, because that diversification is what calms stocks down and gets rid of their individual, peculiar, company-specific characteristics. You're an arsonist. You are a serial killer. You, madam, You eat Cheerios. And you put the milk in before the Cheerios. My God. I had a friend who did that in front of me in my own place. I said, get out! You see, but if I put you guys at a party, you know, you're going to cancel each other out. You know, you're going to have that axe that you usually, but when you set a fire, you're going to use that axe to beat out the fire. And then when you go for your Cheerios, he's going to stop you. You know why? Because he's a serial killer. I set that up so good. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.